Hello, I'm Henry.
And I'm Trey.
And welcome to Marvelous, a Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast.
Where we cover the entire MCU, show by show, movie by movie, and today we're covering Agent Carter episodes 1 through 4 of season 1.
And the Agent Carter one-shot. But before we begin, we just wanted to announce to everyone that our first Patreon exclusive episode on Deadpool 2 is out. So if you want to come check that out, please support us on Patreon.
Or if you're not into Deadpool, but you'd like to hear our thoughts on Spider-Man or X-Men or other superhero movies, come support us on Patreon and let us know what movies you would like us to cover next.
But now we're going to talk about Agent Carter, and we're going to begin with the one-shot called Agent Carter. Simple name. They just use the name of the character, who is Agent Carter. And the show is called Agent Carter. And her one-shot is called Agent Carter. Agent Carter. Agent Carter.
You just said the same thing like three times, but sure.
Don't worry about it. It's all good. So the Agent Carter one-shot came out on the Iron Man 3 DVD. And because people liked it, they eventually made the show, Agent Carter.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how many one-shots inspire television shows.
Yes, and S.H.I.E.L.D. was also inspired by one. And I've heard rumors that they're maybe going to bring them back, which would be awesome because I really want to see more little stories in this universe that is so deep and rich and has so much space for more.
Yeah. You know what other television show should be inspired by a one-shot?
No. What did you have in mind?
The Mandarin. Give us the Mandarin. Oh.
The Mandarin deserves more than a show. He deserves a movie. Iron Man 4, guys, come on.
I agree, but we're not going to get it, so...
Iron Man 4. I am sick of this quitter talk, Trey. We need this movie.
Yes, I'm sure we can make it happen by wishful thinking.
Yes, by sheer willpower, we will make it happen.
Sending thoughts your way, Kevin Feige, hear us.
Okay, well, I guess we got a little sidetracked, but yes, the one-shot. This one-shot's pretty neat, and I find it interesting how they immediately show Peggy is such a capable, amazing agent when we hardly saw that in her in Captain America 1. We heard inklings of it, we saw her use a gun really well, but there's only like one scene of her in combat in the entire movie.
I agree, and that was actually a note I have in one of the episodes because Dum Dum Dugan, who's a Howling Commando, basically says to someone, Peggy Carter was alongside Steve on the battlefield longer than any of us. And I was like, what? They didn't show that at all, did they?
Yeah, I don't think she was in combat except for the final mission.
So it's a weird thing to throw in there because I'm not sure if we're just supposed to assume that happened at some point in the montage, but...
Yeah, like she was a code breaker and stuff, and she worked for the SSR, which is the Strategic Scientific Reserve, so I'm guessing they don't focus on combat, they more focus on things like Project Rebirth that made Captain America, so I don't really know where Peggy got her combat experience. But disregarding how she got to this point, we now have a Peggy Carter who is a badass fighter and super cool agent who can take out an entire warehouse of guys with no problem.
Yeah, and it's really cool to watch. I think this one-shot is phenomenal at demonstrating how great Peggy is. And I think the fight scenes in this one-shot are, like, kind of better than the show. So it's kind of sad that they didn't have, like, the same style. But the show's still cool.
I agree. This was a lot classier, I think. Like, it was just, like, a cool little spy one-shot rather than... like an actual story or anything like we get in the show. So it just allows for more coolness rather than...
I'm just assuming that they had a different stunt double for her in the one shot and they had more of a budget because it was like on the movie side.
Maybe. I don't really know.
But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much the exact same storyline as the show. She's doing secretarial duties in her office, is all oppressed, and gets to overcome that by taking on a mission by herself and going and kicking ass. And then in the morning, her boss tries to scold her for it. And Howard Stark calls in, who's apparently the SSR chief's boss at this point. And
yeah, this was confusing.
It's definitely a different story than the show. So the canon's a little questionable, between these two, but he basically tells the chief that Peggy will be starting S.H.I.E.L.D. with him, and he wants the chief to tell her how honored he is to bring her the news. So that was a fun little dig at the chief.
I love this so much because it also reminded me of the Iron Man movies when Tony forces that, like, senator to congratulate them in public.
Huh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, this series has, like, so many callbacks to Phase 1 and, like, all the movies before. It's super interesting. Like, I didn't even realize how many little callbacks there were until rewatching it now.
I think for Captain America and Iron Man, I guess. I don't know about the other ones.
Yeah, it really was just them, but that's still 5 movies. Or 6 if you're including the Avengers. It's 6 out of 9 movies. I guess I exaggerated a bit, but still, it's a lot.
Was there any callbacks to Winter Soldier, actually? Yeah.
Not directly, but they kind of hinted at similar themes, like how Howard Stark doesn't trust the government with any of his weapons, so he'd rather destroy them than let them be in their hands, which is similar to themes covered in Avengers and Winter Soldier. And also Zola's in the end, preparing for his time to strike in America, the land of opportunity.
It's interesting that you say that theme is tied directly into Winter Soldier, because I took it more as connection to Iron Man 1.
It's both, but I thought the idea of not letting the government have the weapons was more Winter Soldier and Avengers, and not creating the weapons at all is more Iron Man 1.
I suppose that's true.
Yeah, but we could talk more about that when we're talking about the actual episodes.
Yeah, so let's get into the episodes then.
Yes, sir!
Henry, tell me what happened in episodes 1 through 4.
Agent Carter, a woman who has made a name for herself in World War II, working for the SSR and working with Captain America, has found herself back home in America, even though she's British. I don't really know how she ended up there. Whatever! It doesn't matter. And she is working in an office and is bored and not appreciated and is not having her talents used for the greater good. But everything changes when a conspiracy around Howard Stark appears, and everyone believes he is guilty of treason, but not Peggy Carter. She, on his request, goes on a mission to prove his innocence. Can she uncover the conspiracies behind Howard Stark's framing? Or will she be caught for treason herself? Find out on these episodes of Agent Carter.
Yeah, one thing I really like about this show is how they bring in other characters from Captain America that worked with Peggy, like Howard Stark, and later on the Howling Commandos, which is really cool because she did work with all of them, and it would totally make sense that they would show up in her life after that, and it's really nice to see Howard again.
Yeah, it's nice that even though this is her show, it's really a continuation of Captain America 1. Like, you really feel like the world didn't just stop and then wait until Iron Man 1 came out. Like, finally we're getting some of that time filled. And seeing that Peggy was still totally active after the war.
Yeah, for sure. Though, to be honest, I think it would have been probably a better show if they had focused more on all the Captain America characters. Like, seeing this being Peggy Carter and the adventures of the Howling Commandos and Howard Stark, I honestly think might have been a better show.
That would have been cool. To be honest, I don't really understand what the Howling Commandos are doing now since they were still in Europe somewhere. Like, the war is over, right? What are they doing? Like, are they on some military base in Germany? I don't really know. I don't know a lot about this time period in history at all, so it's hard for me to even guess.
Yeah, because I guess it's right before the Cold War started.
Yeah, I guess so. And I don't really remember how quickly Russia devolved from being one of the allies in World War I to being the arch enemy of America in the Cold War, but I guess this takes place during the middle ground time.
I think it might have been synonymous. Like, I think Russia and America were allies because it was necessitated, but at the same time, I think I'm not sure about this, so I probably shouldn't say, but I think they were already starting to be a little cold.
Yeah, I feel bad that I don't have these answers in my brain right now. But I think you're right.
Well, regardless, we got the show we got, and it is a fairly good show for season one.
Yeah, I haven't watched the show since it came out, and it was better than I remembered.
Yeah, it was definitely interesting to watch it again. It's also cool to see the whole show start with Captain America's plane crash and how that kind of propels Peggy on her journey. And I'm really curious if they had to pay Chris Evans to use this footage at all, because I'm pretty sure on television shows, if you show an actor in a different episode, they have to get paid for the episode, even if it's a flashback.
Huh, that's a really good point.
Yeah, but since this is, like, movie footage and it's, like, being played on their TV show, I'm not sure if they would have to do that.
I don't know. That's really interesting. Yeah.
I feel like they wouldn't have, though, just because it would have cost so much to pay him. I don't know.
I don't know. Who knows? I mean, they got Fury cameos in S.H.I.E.L.D., and Samuel Jackson is, like, a well-known actor, so...
That's true.
He might have cost a lot, too.
Yeah, and I guess Chris Evans didn't really have to come in, so maybe... Maybe they didn't have to pay him much at all. It's just like, we're just using your footage.
Yeah, maybe they're just like, here's 10 grand. We're using your likeness for 5 seconds. Cool.
I don't know. It's not something I could find an answer to online. So if anyone knows the answer, let me know.
What about when they show pictures of him? Does that count? I guess not. It's just the video.
I don't know.
We should become lawyers. Anyways, now that we've talked about the cool things that they brought to the table from Captain America 1, it's really cool to see the new things that they brought. And for me, the best new thing they brought was Jarvis. I think Jarvis is hilarious. And it was so cool to see him because later on, he ends up being what inspires Tony Stark to make his AI Jarvis. And seeing this man that had such an influence on one of our other characters' lives for the first time, it's just... really interesting and exciting, and he's really funny, and I like him a lot.
I agree. Jarvis is fantastic, and I really like how they made his character someone who's not afraid about not seeming masculine. Like, just his entire situation of doing all the housework for his wife and pretty much going along with all of her needs and making sure that he's taking care of her and having everything on the schedule perfectly for her, and how much he respects Peggy and isn't intimidated by her. I just think his entire character is done really well to show a man who is secure in his sexuality that he doesn't need to seem overly masculine.
Yeah, for sure. Jarvis is the best man in the show. Like, he is, like, he's a gentleman. He is kind and caring and really nice and funny. He's just the best man of the show, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a true statement. Even though Sousa would probably come in second place.
Well, that's the thing that I wanted to mention about Sousa, is that they did a really good job of showing a man like him who, although he has good intentions at heart, he comes off as being unnecessarily protective of Peggy. And Peggy even confronts him on this. Like, you don't need to defend me. Like, let me stand up for myself. And it's nice that they show even people with a soft heart that are kind to women can still have adverse effects on how females are viewed in society.
Yeah.
As far as I know, as a guy, I think it's good representation of what women have to deal with in their day-to-day lives.
True, though it's also hard to say that when the show is set in the 50s, so it's like they could get away with being sexist without drawing a parallel to today's society, even though a lot of the same struggles are faced today. So I don't know how much you could say it's making a political statement.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if he was an overt statement to men out there these days that you don't need to protect women, just treat them as equals. But I thought it was good that they had a character like him, not just purely good. They showed that Peggy was kind of annoyed by him sometimes, even though she does like him.
Yeah, I'm actually second-guessing my entire statement because I think this whole show is made as a political statement, so... Yeah.
I mean, it obviously is a very feminist piece of media within the MCU, possibly the most feminist thing in the entire MCU, but it doesn't beat you over the head with it or anything. It just shows you the struggles of Peggy Carter, this capable woman living in a world where no one believes in her just because she's a woman. And I think it's done really well.
Yeah, I mean, all the feminist aspects are the things that I love about the show. I love how kick-ass Peggy is, and I love how she is constantly outsmarting and outproving herself, and she doesn't take any shit from anyone. Like, one of the first things that happens in the show, in the very first episode, is that they tell the room, all hands on deck, so Peggy, cover the phones. And she basically tells them, okay, forward all calls to the briefing room. There you go, the phones are covered, let's go.
Yeah, she definitely doesn't take any shit. And she gets more done than, like, anyone in that entire office. She is just awesome.
Yeah, and I could watch her kick ass, like, all day. Like, I'm sad that there's not more fight scenes with her doing that, because that is probably my favorite part of the show.
Yeah, and one other thing that I really appreciate about her character is that she's not perfect, because a lot of people might call some overtly powerful female characters Mary Sues or things like that. But not only is she not, they show that she has weaknesses. Like, Peggy is really arrogant, and she tries to go and do everything on her own without backup or support, and Jarvis just totally rips into her and is like, hey, you need backup. You need support. Even Captain America needed support from you. You need to learn how to take help and not do everything yourself, or else you're going to get hurt. And that's an important lesson that she has to learn in this season, to work with others.
For sure. Even though it's understandable that she goes a little crazy about it after her roommate is assassinated because a guy followed her back to her room.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's illogical, and her motivations are definitely sound, and she has reason not to trust anyone. But it definitely is a weakness that she needs to overcome.
Yeah, though I honestly don't really understand how he followed her when he was, like, going upstairs as she was leaving, and also how he knew who she was when she's, like, a secret agent.
Yeah, that was pretty unclear, but it got the story rolling, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, there's not that much story to talk about from these first four episodes. It's all pretty much Peggy is trying to recover Stark's technology that is dangerous, and also find out who's behind framing him, or who's behind stealing it, so that she can prove his innocence.
Both, so, really.
Yeah, so she does that stuff.
Yeah, like, she follows leads and goes on little adventures to find all the gadgets, first of which is the molecular nitromeme, which can, like, explode then implode things, and it destroys an entire factory in the first episode, and that was pretty cool.
Yes, though I'm not sure why that's too dangerous for people to own when we have bombs that can destroy more than that.
I don't know, but it implodes things, and our bombs don't do that.
Yeah, though I don't know why that's dangerous, but yeah?
Yeah, I think the explosion caused more of the problem.
There's also one thing at the end of the first episode that I still don't understand. Like, they try to make it seem like Stark and Jarvis are plotting against Peggy by saying, like, having Jarvis say, you're right, I don't think she'll have any suspicions at all. And, like, the only thing I can even think of is that he's talking about having her get the blood later, which isn't even a plot until episode 4, so I'm really confused by this.
Yeah, it's really weird. Also, Jarvis's first appearance to Peggy, where he comes out of the shadows in a really sketchy way, is really uncharacteristic of him and just strange.
Yeah.
That was a weird choice. It's like, it's Jarvis. He's this goofy, kind gentleman. He should have been like, hello, Miss Carter. Like, I've come from Howard Stark, and I need to talk to you about proving his innocence.
Yeah, it was odd. There's kind of a lot of things in this show that I think are done mainly for dramatic effect and not really because they make sense.
Yeah, for sure. Another thing I really liked was the usage of cool little gadgets throughout these episodes. Like, in S.H.I.E.L.D., they show Fitz and some other characters using old S.H.I.E.L.D. technology that came out from the SSR era and S.H.I.E.L.D. itself. And in, like, the first episode, we have Peggy using sleep-inducing lipstick and a watch that can break locks. And it was really cool. And I liked these espionage tools in action.
Yeah. Something else that seems worthy of note that I forgot to mention before is that this entire show was created by the writers of the Captain America trilogy and Infinity War.
Who? The Russo brothers? What?
Stephen Marcus and Christopher McFeely, I believe, are their names. The writers, not the directors.
Oh, I had no idea. I didn't even know those movies all even had the same writers.
Yeah.
Huh. Neat. The more you know.
But they did leave it to different showrunners. They wrote the pilot, and then they left it to different showrunners to finish out the arc. But they were involved in the show, which is interesting, since they created the character in the first place.
Huh. Well, they did a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I want to talk about some references to the movies we get. Like, in episode 1, Jarvis takes Peggy to Dr. Venko to talk about the nitramine stuff and vitabrates being used in the process of making or stabilizing nitramine. So that's a reference to Iron Man 2, since Dr. Venko is Ivan Venko's father, who is Whiplash in Iron Man 2. And the Vita Rays are what were used to make Cap. So when Peggy's like, oh yeah, I already know what those do, it made sense since that was in the movie. So references straight off the bat.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Yeah, and although it isn't really a reference to anything, I enjoyed the Captain America radio show clips that are scattered throughout the episode because they're just really funny because they obviously romanticize the real story and shove in ads everywhere that are kind of funny. And I loved how in episode 2 they kept coming on at really awkward times for Peggy and she's like, how the hell does this keep happening? And it is really frustrating her. I thought that was really funny.
That's interesting because I was as infuriated as she was.
I definitely thought they were annoying in the beginning, but once she finally acknowledged that it was really weird that it kept happening, I thought that was really funny. And then I just thought they were funny as the show kept going, especially since they were covered in ads, and it was just funny to see the truth behind the stories.
Yeah, it provided an interesting look at, like, media in the 50s, but the actual show itself just annoyed me.
Yeah, it's definitely not good content, but it was funny, and it was also kind of cool to see how the legends of Captain America have continued throughout the years and how he was seen in the eyes of the public.
The fact that they made it into, or they took Peggy Carter and made it into a damsel story about Betty Carver really, really bothers me.
Yeah, again, I don't like the story. I just like, as a piece of the setting, it feels right. Like, it's overtly sexist, but it shows Captain America as this super American cool hero man person who always punches Hitler. Like, it just felt like it belonged in that place, even though I didn't like it for what it was.
And it provided an interesting look at the behind the scenes of how they make sound effects.
Yeah, that was really funny, like how they were like cracking open lobsters and like punching things to make all the noises. It was funny.
Yep.
Yeah, but another interesting thing in episode 2 that they had was Peggy being disguised as a milk truck inspector. And I like that she keeps disguising herself in this show, since it's just cool espionage stuff. And I thought her personality and acting in this scene was really funny.
And her American accent is flawless.
Yeah, that was spot on.
For a second, I was like, wait, is the actress actually British or is she American?
Okay, I'm so glad you said that because I actually looked her up too. Because I'm like, oh God, is she actually an American? Wow, her British accent is spot on. But no, she's British.
Just like Tom Holland, they just have really good American accents.
Yeah, I think she might actually be half and half, like half American, half British, but I think she grew up in England either way.
Yeah.
So that might have been the source of her great American accent, her parents.
Perhaps.
Indeed. Another thing that I really liked about these first episodes was Peggy moving into that girl's home.
Yeah, I know. It was, I mean, honestly, that was ridiculous with the whole, like, no drinking, always dress formal, no man above the first floor, curfew at 10 p.m. Like, Jesus Christ, they're treated like children.
Well, that was the point. Like, the mother of the house wanted them to be controlled proper ladies and that she would rein in their scandalous desires and whatever.
I just think it's funny that it was treated as, like, this desirous house when, like, no adult that I know would want to live there because you would be so hampered. Like, you wouldn't be able to be an adult.
Yeah, though it was a completely different era, so
I know,
maybe that is still more freedom than a lot of women had at the time. I don't know.
It's just interesting.
Yeah, but it was just really funny. And I like how when they're being introduced to the house, the owner of the place is like, Harry Houdini could perform, like, all these tricks, but even he couldn't make it above the first floor. And, like, just everything about how serious it is for anyone to break the no men above the first floor rule. It was just, like, so intense, but funny.
I really thought that they were going to explain how she found out, and they never did. And I was just waiting, like, how did you find out, though? He was scaling the outside of your building, and that's how he left. Like, I want to know.
Yeah, I guess she thinks that she's omnipresent and can catch anyone in the building, but it seems like it's pretty clear that men have gotten in there before, just she never found out about it. Like, when Howard Stark broke into the building, he was getting around and she didn't notice him.
Yeah, and that's why it really bothers me that we don't know how she found out about the other guy when supposedly all he did was scale the building into a room and then go out the same way. When Howard was, like, wandering around the floors.
Yeah, it didn't totally make sense, but it was still funny. overall. And at the house, we also get introduced to Dottie, who at first seems to get a little bit more attention than she deserves, but we find out later, at the end of these four episodes, that she's some kind of secret agent.
Yeah, I like the fake out that they did by having the male assassin come in to try and kill Agent Carter, and you think it's going to be him that does something, and then Dottie just takes him out immediately, and she's actually the one that's like, oh, I'm like a secret agent.
Yeah, that was great. And sometimes fake outs are handled very poorly and they're kind of frustrating to watch, but this one was great. Like, you just see Dottie open her door and catch this guy that we've seen hyped up for the beginning of this episode with a machine gun pistol. And she's just like, oh, that's a mini machine gun? I want it. And just kicks his ass in 5 seconds. Like, that was really cool.
For sure.
In these episodes, we also get told about Jarvis's interesting backstory about how he even started working for Stark to begin with. And how he was charged with treason for saving his eventual wife because he forged papers to get her out of the country because she was Jewish and he wanted to protect her. And I really like that story, and it shows you a lot of who Jarvis is as a man, like how kind he is and how he'll go to any lengths to protect the people he cares about. And it's just a sweet story.
Indeed.
Another thing that's really interesting about this scene is that when Peggy's telling Jarvis she needs to know the truth of why he was charged with treason, she reveals that she spent a week in the sewers of New York in 1942, and I just want to know why. It was like an offhand little comment, but it seems like there's a huge story to tell of why would she do that.
Yeah, that's definitely odd.
But this is when they were searching for all of Stark's stolen tech, and they find out that it was stored in a nearby boat. That was a weird decision. You'd think they get it on the boat and then, like, leave the country or something.
Yeah, and also they get attacked on the boat by, like, some random dude who's apparently hired by the guy that is dead that led them to the boat because he drew the symbol leading them to the boat, which is his boat. Yeah. But I was like, is he just not giving the message to this guy that they're good now because he's dead? I don't know. I was really confused by that.
And that was, like, Leviathan's symbol, right? And that's, like, the last time they ever use it, I think. And the first time.
I don't think it was clear that it was Leviathan's symbol. I wasn't sure if he was just saying, like, this symbol is on my boat.
Yeah, and also, why did he reveal that information? I don't remember if he had any motivation to.
I think it was just because he was dying, so he had no purpose in holding it back, and he was against Leviathan, so he's like, sure, I'll help you, I guess. But, yeah, it was questionable.
Yeah, I guess. But then, yeah, they find all the gear. They report it to the SSR so that they could collect it, where we get to hear Jarvis's American accent.
Oh, yeah, that was funny. But then the whole crew comes down to get the tech, all the cops, and Krasminski ends up driving home the witness that they knocked out on the boat, the Leviathan servant dude or Brannis servant dude. I don't know, whoever he was working for. And then an assassin comes and just kills Krasminski and the witness. And the cops blame it on the person who gave the anonymous tip, which just doesn't make any sense because they literally only killed Krasminski and the one witness that they could have killed without giving the anonymous tip. So what purpose do they think that would serve in the investigation?
Yeah, it didn't make that much sense. Like, that's one thing that's, like, weird about this entire season is that their reasoning for thinking that Howard Stark is guilty is very thin.
I agree. And it showed in a lot of places like this.
Yeah.
And they blame the whole thing on Stark and say that this whole mess is because of him, even if he's not involved in it. So therefore, he's guilty of causing Krasminski's death. And it's just like, this is just so much of a stretch. If we had a That's a Stretch for Shows, this would be
it. Yeah, seriously. It was really weird. And honestly, I was a bit thrown off by why Peggy was even hit that hard by the cop's death. Like, I guess she blames herself, but why?
I mean, she did work with him, and when someone you know dies, you can take it hard. Even if you don't like them.
Fair enough. But anyways, we move on to episode 4. Which has Howard Stark's triumphant return to New York City, which is great because now he's in the show more and he is fucking hilarious.
Yeah, and we already talked about him sleeping with all the people in Peggy's building, but...
Yeah, but seriously, how does he work that fast? He just gets anyone he wants, whenever. Did he just knock on the girl's door and he's like, hey, I'm Howard Stark, and she just jumped on him, like...
I literally was thinking the same thing, like, how... Why are all these girls so into you? What is your mojo?
I mean, he is this, like, classy, super famous playboy, I guess, so lots of young women with their lustful desires that need to be reined in by the woman who owns the house are just being unleashed on this man who made it above the first floor.
It does surprise me, though, in an era where a woman who has sex before marriage is, like, the scourge of the earth, considered just absolutely, like, it's appalling. It amazes me that he's able to sleep with so many women.
Yeah, I don't know how forward-leaning New York City specifically was, though, because maybe they were more so. And also, he's famous. He's Howard Stark. But I also like the whole break-in scene of the woman who owns the house, like, following Peggy around because she's suspicious that she's sneaking in a man. And that was really funny.
Yeah, that was funny.
It's a good thing that Howard Stark got out of there.
For sure. But he ends up lying to Peggy and telling her that he needs her to steal back an invention that'll black out electricity in New York for a few years. Which honestly just felt odd to me the whole time I was listening to it, because of all these dangerous inventions, I'm like, that doesn't seem like it would be the most dangerous thing there that he would be that worried about.
I mean, a massive EMP can cause a ton of damage, so I think it is pretty bad.
Worse than, like, all of his other technology?
Well, we don't really honestly know that much about his technology at this point.
I mean, okay, think about Item 17, which is shown later in the season, and tell me that this is worse.
Oh, it's not, but we don't know about that yet.
I know, but... I guess... Like, knocking out electricity in New York for a few years, yes, it's bad. People would have to live in the dark ages. Oh my gosh. But...
Trey, I think you're really underestimating how bad that is.
I probably am, but I don't understand. Tell me how bad it is.
You said going back to the dark ages. They would literally be going back to the dark ages. That would be awful. Modern civilization runs on electricity and plumbing and stuff like that. To be fair, I don't know how much the plumbing infrastructure of New York ran on electricity back in those days, but it would be bad. People wouldn't be able to cook their food. Well, I guess it's also gas. I don't know, man. It'd be bad.
Yeah, I'm not buying it.
Sorry that I can't convince you. Like, it's obvious that it'd be way more devastating today.
Oh, for sure. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyways... Peggy goes along with it, but then Jarvis keeps giving these really awkwardly obvious nervous tics.
Yeah, like, but with grabbing his ears, like, do you really not see what you're doing right now, dude?
Yeah.
It's so painfully, awkwardly obvious.
It was a little hard to swallow. He's like, yeah, every time, just grabbing his ear all nervously.
Yeah, like...
But Peggy realizes it, and then, honestly... I find it absolutely ridiculous, though, that she's willing to hit the switch because of Jarvis's nervous tick.
Yeah, like, seriously, what if she was wrong? I mean, yeah, it was really obvious that Jarvis was hiding something, but what if it was some other kind of dangerous weapon?
Exactly. That was my thought, too. Like, he may be lying about what it does, but that doesn't mean you should press it.
Yeah, jeez. Oh, my God. Though, I do like one of the points that Howard Stark made in this episode when he said... Talking about the weapon, since when did the U.S. military have a weapon that they didn't use? Because that's a good reference to Avengers with Nick Fury going to any length, making any kind of weapon to stop an alien invasion, and S.H.I.E.L.D. and Captain America Winter Soldier, with America and S.H.I.E.L.D. going too far, making weapons that were too advanced, that were beyond anyone's safe control, and it causing problems.
Yeah, I also meant to mention... how neat it is that they gave Howard Stark the exact same problem as his son later on.
Yeah.
Which is his weapons getting sold to the wrong people, and then he has to own up and stop it from being in the wrong hands and take responsibility.
Yes, except he continues making weapons for the next 40 or so years.
This is true.
So he doesn't have the same moral lessons that Tony had.
But he does destroy his most powerful weapons, at least, by the end. That's not really a spoiler. It's fine.
Sure.
So I guess that's progress.
Yeah. But anyways, when Peggy opens the canister and reveals that it's actually Captain America's blood, Peggy is pissed off at Stark and Jarvis and doesn't want anything to do with them. And Jarvis feels so awful because he respects Peggy so much, but he was just following his orders. And when Jarvis confronted Stark about this while getting their shoes shined, we got a Stan Lee cameo!
Yes, we did. Completely unexpectedly.
Yeah, God. I find it so funny that Stan Lee cameos still catch me totally off guard sometimes.
Well, it's because you don't expect him in a TV show.
Yeah, it's so funny.
And it's like it could happen at any time in the midst of a super long run. It's like...
Yeah, and that was great. It was super funny.
And he just asked to see Stark's newspaper.
Yeah, yeah. But anyways, we already talked about Dottie revealing herself as an evil villain at the end of this episode. But we also get the mysterious typewriter that sends wireless messages that was shown at the beginning of this season, sending messages to the SSR.
Yes, which is the cliffhanger, but we also see Peggy hiding Steve's blood in the wall.
Oh yeah, Peggy hammering a hole into her wall. I feel like that's not the safest place ever. I feel like it's pretty cliche to hide things behind paintings. I figured Peggy would come up with something better than that. At least floorboards, come on.
I guess so. I don't know.
You don't have a secret storage location in your abode, Trey?
I just put stuff in drawers.
Fair enough. Well, if you ever get some superhero serum blood, you should definitely get a better place to store it.
Yes, I would probably get a safe, which would be easily broken into.
Then you need something better, man. Anyways, one other thing that we learn about in this episode is the mysterious Battle of Fennel, which the chief of the SSR goes to Germany to find out more about. And it comes into play in the next 4 episodes of Agent Carter.
So we will talk about it next time.
Indeed.
So Henry, thoughts overall?
I really like these episodes. I think it does a really good job world building. I think it does a really good job melding old material with this new story without seeming like it's using it as a crutch. Like this show really stands on its own.
I agree. I think it's pretty well done. Though the first 4 episodes, I think, are a little slow and a little weak in their story. So I personally find the latter half of the season to be kind of jam-packed. And I think they could have unpacked that a little more and started it a little earlier. So that's my opinion.
Yeah, as I'm sure our listeners have noticed, we didn't really talk all that much about the individual little spy exploits of Agent Carter in these 4 episodes because, yeah, they're not super interesting. I just really like all the character interactions that we get, especially with Peggy and Jarvis.
I agree.
So I guess that's the end of our podcast.
Yeah, so you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at MarvelousMCU. You can find us on Instagram at MarvelousMCUPodcast. And you can send us an email at MarvelousMCUPodcast@gmail.com.
And wherever you listen to this podcast, please like, rate, subscribe, share it with a friend. Anything you can do to help share the podcast is greatly appreciated.
And as we mentioned earlier, you can find our Deadpool 2 patron-exclusive podcast on patreon.com. We would appreciate any amount that you will donate, even if it's as little as a dollar. Also, just so everyone knows, we will be taking a 3-week break after this recording, so it will be an extra week longer than normal in order to sync up our specials on Luke Cage and Ant-Man and the Wasp. So, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for our special on Luke Cage Season 2.